Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 1st of November, 2018. On the podcast today, Matthew Idions, Chief Executive Officer of Rose Petroleum. And Matthew talks about the U.S. Bureau of Land Management approving their application for the permit to drill a well within the country's Paradox acreage in Utah. Also on the podcast, Alistair Clayton, Executive Director of Primoris Investments, PRIM, ticker there, and Adam discusses their investments and what their strategy is. They have some very interesting investments too. Also on the podcast, I have Dom Ventura, Chief Executive Officer of Liberty Herbal Technologies, company Ananda Developments hold a 15% share of, and Dom talks about the launch of HAPAC, their patent-pending technology for vaping medicinal cannabis, which is happening in Italy very soon. And Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers BT. The missus is half pleased. She's nearly at break-even. Royal Dutch Shell, RDSB, and, of course, Just Eat, who have results out today. Plus, I also have two lists, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see the top tens of these lists at foxmarkets.co.uk.
If you're looking to diversify your portfolio and allocate to unquoted companies, Rockpool, one of our sponsors, offers growth equity and high-yield lending for established and profitable private companies. Investing can be tax efficient, and Rockpool Services is based on thorough due diligence and continual company monitoring. Capital at risk. Visit rockpool.uk.com or call 0203 8548 100.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Matthew Idions, Chief Executive Officer of Rose Petroleum. ROSE is the ticker there. Matthew, thanks for joining me.
Great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, you've had some decent news out today. So you've got the Bureau of Land Management have approved an application for a permit to drill GV221 well. So we'll get into what that means in a bit. Before we do, Matthew, for people not familiar with the company, give them a quick summary. What's it all about, Rose Petroleum, please?
Yeah, so Rose is a US, North American focused. We are in the Paradox Basin. We have a large footprint there. We're approximately 80,000 acres. Which we are earning in a 75% working interest in. So the Paradox is a natural fracture project. So we don't frack, which is key, I suppose. So we shoot the 3D seismic, which we did the end of last year. We identify where the potential fractures are, and then you target those with horizontal drilling. Drilling into those fractures. So instead of having to drill horizontal wells and then frack them, we are identifying where the fractures exist already and drilling into those and utilizing those. And this is proven to work directly south of us. There's the Cane Creek unit, which has been operating since sort of 2010, I think, approximately. Fidelity went in there drilled a 9-well program, took the production from 100 barrels a day to 3,500 barrels a day in about 18 months, based on that process of utilizing the seismic to identify the targets and then drilling into them.
Yeah, and it's probably worth mentioning here, the CPR you had done.
Yes, so post the 3D seismic, we did updated our competent persons report. We got Gaffney Klein to do an independent reserve estimate or resource estimate, and they gave us, they upgraded our resources to contingent resources, and we got 2C net to rose, so 75% of 9.25 million barrels of oil and 18.5 BCF of gas, which also gave a calculation of the value of that, and the NPV10 pre-tax is $122 million. Yeah. And that was on about 20% of our acreage, because the 3D seismic only covered about 20% and also only represented one formation when there's probably another four or five which we think could be commercial.
Absolutely. Okay, well, let's go into this. The Bureau, the U.S. Bureau of Land Management, they've approved this application. Take us through this. What does it mean? What's the significance of this, then?
So this is the process that you go through in order to be able to drill your wells. So we're the 22-1, we shot the 3D end of last year, and then in March the BLM had a land auction, and some land became available adjoining our Gunnison Valley unit, which is where we're focusing our operations. So you have your underlying leases. We got about 80,000. About 54 of those are held within an exploratory unit, which you create, and you have a boundary to it. And then the leases within that are then sort of pooled, and you're then allowed to operate wherever you like within that unit, rather, so you can go across leases. That's the sort of the key advantage. There are lots of other advantages as well, but not enough time to go into them all. We acquired this new acreage based on the 3D seismic results, because they covered some acreage we didn't own. So we acquired that acreage. We then ranked all of our well locations, and the 22-1 came up as our top location, structurally, and also the proximity to the 2811 well, which is literally on the outskirts of our acreage, just sort of 400 meters away. And it is a producing well that our 3D seismic covers and showed that it is a vertical well only, not a horizontal well, which is what we would be doing, which would be far more productive. It's a vertical well, which was drilled actually without 3D seismic, and purely by pure chance, it drilled straight into a fracture network, and it has produced 141,000 barrels of oil just out of a straight vertical well, which was pure luck for them. That was drilled in 2006. But obviously it shows that there is flowing oil in the area, and we expect that to be actually consistent throughout the basin. And the driver here is the fractures. So that's the importance of the 3D seismic. So, and we've got fantastic quality 3D seismic, which has identified where these fractures are, which gives you then your drill targets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So the 22-1 is in this new acreage. Mm-hmm. The BLM have agreed that we can extend the boundary of the Gunnison Valley unit to include this new acreage in it. So we've got the permit. That's brilliant. That's fantastic news. So that's the BLM and the state have approved everything that we need to do in order to operate. They have approved verbally that we can extend the unit to bring that acreage into the unit, which will then mean that we can make that our first obligation well, of which we have to do four wells to keep the unit. Obviously, the underlying leases are a separate thing. If you have 10 years on them, even if the unit disappears, it doesn't matter. Those 10 years leases are still valid. But operating is a lot easier within the unit, and therefore you want to try and keep the unit. And we have the obligation to do four wells within that unit. We drill the first one. Obviously, we want to drill more, and therefore that's not really an issue, the obligation. But that is our first choice, and we're really pleased that the BLM have allowed us to extend the unit in order to make that one our first well, which is excellent news. It does mean a little bit of a timeline in terms of it takes 45 days approximately to get that processed, which takes us very close to the end of the year, which was our target to try and drill this well by the end of the year. And obviously that has had an effect on discussions refinancing, which is obviously the key point, which most people want to talk about,
yeah.
Understandably. And getting all of this regulatory stroke administration stroke bureaucratic stuff out the way, get that done, will be key, and then we will be able to accelerate those ongoing discussions that we are having regarding sort of farm-ins and financing. So once that is done, we will have had everything out the way regulatory-wise, and we're ready to drill, which is what people want to see.
Okay, so at the moment you are talking to people about potential farmers, but obviously at the moment they need this permitting and all that covered off, the administrative part of that covered off before they take this any further. Is that the case?
Yes. So as we've announced, discussions are ongoing, and those post the approval, once those are finalised and clarified, then obviously we can accelerate those discussions.
Yeah, I understand you can't say any more than in the RNS, but these discussions, are they all farming? Are they part debt? Are they part equity? What is it? Is it any mix? Is it a mix, or is the option still open yet?
The options are still open. Yeah. We're talking to all parties, basically, leave no stone unturned in order to get this done. The key is to get the well drilled and realise the value. We've worked on this project for a long time. We've done an excellent job of doing it in a methodical manner to understand it technically. We've got a really good understanding now. We're really confident of the success of the well. And we've got some fantastic data to back that up. So, the key bit is to drill a well and prove that. We're very excited by the prospect of doing that.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. So, but you say so the administrative part of this, the permitting takes around about 45 days, is that right?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's next sort of big milestone, really?
I think it is, yeah. And once that's out of the way, then obviously we can then, as we said, accelerate the sort of those ongoing discussions with the financing side of things, through farming, etc. And hopefully that would then get the ball really rolling, because I think that's probably what is holding us back, whether rightly or wrongly, because the upside on this project is enormous. From where our market cap stands personally, I think there is there's such an amazing upside that it confuses me somewhat that we can be where we are, but there we are where we are. The upside is clear to see. The qualified persons report gives the NPV. A successful well will dramatically change the company.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you are a sub 5 million market cap, and of course that, like I said, the NPV, there's many, many multiples of that. But I suppose people are just waiting to see, aren't they? Some people are sitting on the sidelines again. What's going on here? But you are closing in the in the action period, in a very important time for you, isn't it?
It is.
Very exciting. And we're nearing that time now. So, like I said, 45 days, and just after that, hopefully, you'll conclude financing talks. And then it's all to the drill, isn't it?
It is indeed. Mm. Yep. Subject to the usual approvals to actually get in and rig availability. We are ready to roll.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Matthew, in summary, for people listening to this, liking the sound of the story but not yet following it, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
I think Ruse has an excellent project with certainly massive scalability, and a great technical backup to that. Obviously, the upside is huge from where we stand in value terms, and in terms of timeline to get there, hopefully we are very much nearing it. So, those would be the three. I suppose short timeline to massive potential. The potential is definitely there, and it's technically supported. We're confident of the results.
Marvellous stuff. Matthew, good to chat to you. And like I said, no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alistair Clayton, Executive Director of Primoris Investments, PRIM is ticker there. Alistair, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Justin. Very good to speak to you.
Yeah, well, I've seen you, mentioned on social media a bit, and so I'm familiar you are an investment company, but beyond that, I don't really know what you're invested in, so it's nice to have you on, because I'm an active investor myself, but give us a brief summary, Alistair. What is Primoris Investments all about, please?
Primoris is a pretty rare beast. It's a listed investment company, as you said, listed on AIM under code PRIM. Justin, we were somewhat born out of frustration. We realised there's no way for smaller retail investors to invest in pre-IPO, early stage IPO situations. So what we decided to do was, rather than complain about it, was to set up a vehicle, Primoris, to go out, actively invest, namely in two sort of business streams, technology and oil and gas. We find they're complementary and quite work quite well from a risk perspective. And to go out there, make some investments, get some great returns on those investments, and in the fullness of time, return excess money to shareholders. It's that simple.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, you just announced your quarterly investor update. So take us through some of the highlights and take us through some of the investments you're very excited about, if you would, Alistair.
Sure. Thanks, Justin. Yeah, look, our Q3 report came out not long ago. We tried to do a Q3 report to keep everyone up to speed of what we're doing, regardless of the sort of inter-period RNSs that sort of punctuate the news flow each week. Essentially, we've got a broad portfolio, namely in technology, all at various stages of sort of their gestation period, if you like, sort of some early stage stuff to some more mature, and same for oil and gas. I guess just to sort of pick three highlights really that are sort of more symptomatic or emblematic of the kind of investments we make. Probably our number one, and as we state well in our Q3 report, is Engage Technology Partners. And I know a lot of our shareholders have been emailing me about Engage, and they've been finding a lot of news online. And I would always encourage investors to, Google's a very useful tool. Engage provides sort of full lifespan cloud-based services for engaging and employing pay, bill, tax, and compliance primarily for the contingent workforce. It's a company that came out of a very experienced management team. They wanted to raise some money. They went out, saw what was available in the private equity world. They didn't like what they were offered from a sort of valuation and how much of the business was going to go. So through a rather serendipitous relationship, I was introduced to the company. And after it was explained to us, we saw where they were going. So they started off with a couple of corporate clients. They've now got over 75 and nearly 100 contracted. And they service industries from fast food, retail, construction, and they're, as I said in my last sort of quarterly report, I mean, they're really knocking it out of the park, to the point that they're now engaged a well-known city broker, whose name I'm not allowed to use at the moment, who are out there looking for pre-IPO funds to do an IPO in 2019. Mm-hmm. But I'm very proud that Primoris was probably the only what one could term institutional investor. These investments are very often only the domain of high net worth individuals. And through Primoris, our shareholders could get exposure to that deal. And we think that could be a real step change value for us.
So just explain what they do again. So that they are, what do they actually do?
They have taken the entire software domain of companies you may have seen on various Formula One sponsorships, that service the recruitment and the compliance and the pay and bill industry, and they've basically created a complete seamless cloud-based software solution that essentially usurps all of their business. Okay, mm-hmm. So they are taking business from big incumbents, all on the basis of quality of product and cost. So they are now enable a large corporate, of which they have many, all the way down to a small agency, to hire those people, to make sure they're compliant, IR35, GDPR, to make sure they're paying the right amount of tax, and to eventually paying those people. And these are all back and middle office functions that costs all industry a lot of money, and they're effectively crunching that cost base and creating a much better product for the users, i.e. the workers, and the corporates that have to undertake employing them. These are very often high volume lower paid workers. Mm-hmm. So the incentive there for the big incumbents to service that end of the gene pool just hasn't been there. And Engage has swept in and taken up a huge chunk of that business. And we're really looking forward to seeing their Q3 report, which will hopefully be in our hands next week. And we'll be forwarding that on to shareholders once we get it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's Engage. What other investments you got there then, Alistair?
Look, Justin, a really topical one that I'm sure needs no introduction. As you know, we were a consortium member in the Horse Hill Developments Limited. Yep. To be more true to our mandate, we wanted to move from a project level investment whereby we have to physically add cash to the various operating budgets of that company, to simply being a shareholder. That's what we should be doing. It has some great cost implications for us and gives us a much purer leverage to what's going on at Horse Hill. And through that, we own a really substantial number of UCOG shares. We announced that we had sold our final 5% in HHDL to UCOG, and we're very happy to sit back as like many of your listeners as shareholders of UCOG. I watch the various Twitter feeds, etc. I see lots of tankers leaving the well site. So, like everyone, we're very optimistic that the extended well test is going to show some really great results. So, through our share ownership, we just have some great leverage to that. And probably the last and most recent investment we made, just to give your listeners a sort of indication of the sort of investments we make equity investments in listed companies, we make equity investments in unlisted companies, and of course we look for little niche debt opportunities. We recently put $500,000 into a loan note to an Australian software company, of which I'm very familiar with, and you know, it's a 12-month note. We're getting a 12% coupon on that money, and we're getting a couple of warrants for every dollar we've invested riding along with that. And that's just a really neat example of a debt deal that's too small to really be syndicated amongst the big players, but shows a really nice return because, you know, we've got some cash that we're not spending. We want to make use of that cash and make sure we're getting value for money out of that. So that's a really nice sort of, if you like, a bit of an example of the spectrum of things that we're active in right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And just looking forward, what's what are you looking at? What do you hope to be? What's your vision here then, Alistair?
Yeah, vision. Look, I suppose the key points, and I tried to sort of hammer them home in the quarterly report, and make no bones about it. We see value now. It's as simple as that. You know, you look at our cash shares plus the sum of the parts calculation I mentioned earlier. You know, we are undervalued on simply the cash we've invested, let alone what we believe are the gains within the portfolio today. You know, we've essentially exited the Horse Hill project level stake, and we've made a really nice, you know, I have to be careful, unaudited gain because our accounts aren't due out for a while, but you know, I've circa £1 million on that. You know, so that's already demonstrating we can go into situations and we can exit them and we retain upside on that investment. So value now, really. I understand, you know, the tide's been going out. It's been a pretty rough October for a lot of equity investors. But have a look at what we're doing. Have a look at our cash. Have a look at our cash burn. Have a look at the money we've invested. And I believe the sum of the parts makes it compelling now. I suppose in sort of moving forward, what's the opportunity? Well, the opportunity is not only buying it for less than some of the parts, but is then saying, well, what are the gains likely to be with the investments we've already made? You know, as I've said, with Engage, with our UCOG shares, with the Zeus loan note, but also some other cracking investments that if you want to refer to our quarterly, you can look at WeShop, you can look at TrueSpine, you can look at our oil and gas investments, SOA, et cetera, et cetera. So there are gains within those. Yes, they're unrealized yet. If we were a traditional fund, we would be able to value them up on a NAV basis, but we're not. We're an investment company, so we can't do that. But have a dig around. You know, once it becomes evident, we believe, to the street that we've got real investments in there, then I think the value would be even more compelling. And I suppose lastly, probably surprising to many, we don't want to be the world's biggest investment company. You know, I see a sort of balance sheet of $25 million. As our goal, we don't get paid on how much money we run. We get paid on return, Okay, so what we want to do is, when we do have excess cash, is to return that to shareholders. We can do that through dividends, you can do it through buybacks. There's a number of mechanisms, but I guess what I'm trying to demonstrate is if we can demonstrate portfolio growth and therefore share price appreciation, and we can provide a yield to our investors, we think that's a pretty compelling argument of why you should be owning our shares. And to be frank, if you have some risk appetite in your portfolio, why you should be investing in us now.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, just mention WeShop. I've seen WeShop mentioned quite a few times. So just explain what WeShop do, if you could.
Okay, WeShop is probably the closest we would come to a traditional sort of what you would call sort of a dot-com investment. You know, we tend to stay in the more boring business-to-business mode of helping to reshape the way businesses work, and that often doesn't get the headlines. I suppose what you might call our, for better words, sort of sexier or more millennial investment is in WeShop. WeShop is a platform for allowing referral and amongst individuals for various retail opportunities. There's a lot of cynicism around Facebook, etc., and other platforms that are pushing ideas and pushing, you know, what is often seen to be cynically targeted recommendations, etc. There's a lot of distrust amongst general users. WeShop is addressing that by having your friends and people you genuinely know recommending those sorts of things to you. The platform's been developed over a couple of years, and it's been in beta tests, and it's now ready to roll out. But I think probably one of the key things that, other than what we think is a very sound business model, that really attracted to us was the team that it's got around it. If you go to their website or go to our various RNSs on WeShop, they've got an absolutely world-class board, because, you know, to execute these sorts of things in what is a competitive space, we understand you need really, you know, high-caliber business people who have, to be frank, have deep pockets and deep understanding of the retail environment. And from Michelle Mooney to Matthew Hammond and to various other board members, you know, he runs Mail.ru, largest internet company in Russia. It really is a breadth of experience that we think that they have the ability to execute. So WeShop's quite a large investment for us. We've got just under sort of £900,000 in that, in two stages. And yeah, we're looking forward to hearing some news from them very soon as well. So keep an eye out for that.
Marvelous stuff. Okay, so in summary, Alistair, if you could, three bullet points, if someone's liking the sound of this but are not yet following the story, why should they hit that follow button on your page and Vox and add you to their watch list, please?
Yep, sure. Again, really to reprise on what I've just said, you know, number one, value now. Have a look at the value within the company now. If you want to make an investment based on what's already in there. Second, have a look at what the opportunities could be. You know, we've already planted a lot of these seeds in farming parlance, and, you know, we believe that the harvests are not too far away. And lastly, just be absolutely clear that, unlike endless growth companies, we intend to get to a relatively modest size, to be honest, and we will start returning cash back out, because investment companies, if they really want to trade to their potential, will always return money to investors.
Marvellous stuff. Good to chat to you, Alistair. Hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Look forward to it. Thanks, mate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dom Ventura, Chief Executive Officer of Liberty Herbal Technologies, which is a company Ananda Developments hold a 15% share of. Dom, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Justin.
Now, I recently had on your colleague, Simon. Is that correct?
Simon Racker, yes.
Yes, who is he's obviously a product director there, isn't he?
Is our product director, yes, and more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you both have a sort of background in British-American tobacco, is that correct?
Yeah, we do have. We used to work together on projects for next generation products, mm-hmm, for tobacco, very much focused on the new technology of heat not burn.
Yeah.
And we met in 2007, and I think it's more than a business collaboration, became also a sort of a friendship collaboration.
I understand.
And so we are here.
Yeah, I understand. And just for people not aware, I mean, you're working in sort of in the medicinal cannabis sort of field, and that's where Ananda come in, because Ananda are an investment company into that area. So ANA is a ticker there for people wanting to search for that company. But let's go into your technology first and foremost, and tell us about Liberty Herbal Technologies, if you could, Dom.
Okay, yeah, well, Liberty Herbal Technologies, or LHT as we call them, is a UK-based company that was established to develop and bring to market HAPAC, mm-hmm. which is our new patent-pending technology for vaping dried herbs. HAPAC is a very simple system. How we explain it is a sachet of pre-ground dried herbs for portable vaporizers, which save time, money, the environment, and are easy to use as putting a pod in a coffee machine. Mm-hmm. So it's a very simple, dosed, and very high-quality innovation that we are bringing into this market.
Excellent stuff. And you're just about launching this. I mean, you've just been to an exhibition, I understand, in Napoli. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It was one of the largest exhibitions on medical cannabis and what is called legal cannabis in Italy. Mm-hmm. Legal cannabis is a high content of CBD and a very low content of THC, below 0.2%.
Explain that. What does that mean? Explain that if you could, Dom.
Okay, I'll try to make it simple and not to do the too scientific. Mm-hmm. CBD is the anti-inflammatory part of the plant.
Yeah.
It really relax your body. It really can do wonder on your anxiety and other issues that you might have. The THC is the one who works with the mind. So is the psychotic part of the plant. And unfortunately, this is the part that is the most illegal in many markets. Okay. As an application for medical patients, it is important that you have an entourage, what they call it, an entourage effect. So a good benefit on your body for curing your pain, but also a good balance in your mind in order to keep you busy and trying to forget about your pain.
Yes.
So that's why the two benefits of the plants are coming from a good balance between the two.
Yeah. So in your sachets there, the herb that's ground up there, what is the mixture there? What's the makeup of that?
At the moment, with the partnership we have with the Italian company and in Italian legal cannabis, is a high CBD content. The one we have used at the exhibition was 7% in CBD, mm-hmm. and a very low content of THC, 0.15-16. Okay. So very legal in Italy, and it is an emerging market with big success.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tell us, how did that exhibition go then?
So the exhibition is, I say, it's called Canapai Mostra, which in English is hemp on show. It attracts more international than Italian growers, distributors, resellers. More than 120 were there, and it lasted for 3 days. Mm-hmm. It was pretty intense, yeah. But very, very exciting seeing all these people coming in.
Yeah. And
we presented as a sort of a worldwide premiere. HAPAC and HAP. HAP is our consumer brand, and HAPAC is the brand technology for the sachet. And I must say the reaction was overwhelming. I couldn't expect a better reaction from consumers.
Okay.
Not only consumers, distributors, resellers. Since we were there just presenting the product and not selling anything, we I think we lost a lot of sales opportunity.
Yeah, but hopefully you'll catch that up. I mean, because you're launching. When are you launching?
According to the plan, we should be in the shops in Milan, Italy, before Christmas.
Okay, and at the moment, do you have a pricing point? How much it is, and what you hope to generate, or any ideas?
Yeah, it's good that you have asked, because one of our objective of the exhibition was first of all, to understand the acceptance of this new innovation, but also it was to understand also the price range that the consumer would be willing to pay for this.
Yeah.
And the totality of the consumers, distributors, resellers, everyone who came there and tried the product was exactly in the price range that we are thinking to market the proposition.
Yeah,
which is I don't know if I could say, but in euros is between 70 euros and 90 euros mm-hmm. for the price of a bundle offer of a vaporizer and 1 gram of 4 sachets of Hapak.
Yeah. And I mean, I suppose it's worth people going to your website. It's hapak.tech, isn't it? You can see sort of how it works there. It's this sort of vaporizing machine and then the
everything sachet. Is there. Everything is there. You should see the benefits. You should see how to use it. You should see what are the key ingredients and the technical information of the product. And if you have any questions, leave a comment there.
Yeah, and you said the benefits to your system, I mean, I quite like it. It's an acronym. It says Herb and Paper Anti-Combustion Technology. So you put these little sachets, like I say, in the device, and it's an exact dose, isn't it? And it's also eco-friendly, I suppose.
Correct. I mean, it's think about the herb, how it's used at the moment. Mm-hmm. Most of the consumers buy the flowers. Then they have to grind the flowers in small particles and put it in their cigarettes or whatever they use. But mostly it's used through smoking it. Mm-hmm. So we are proposing, and probably coming from my background of tobacconist for more than 20 years, mm-hmm. something which is, let's say, healthier or less toxic on your body, because the vaporization doesn't really burn anything. Yeah. The temperature goes up maximum to 220 degrees, and through this vaporization, you will get all the benefit of the plant. Yeah. Actually, the decarboxylation of the product, it is ideal at that temperature.
Yeah.
190, 220. When you smoke it, the majority of the benefit of the herbs are burned and are not getting into your body.
Yeah.
So you have a double whammy here. On one side, you have less toxic coming from no combustion. And on the other hand, you have more benefit coming in through your body because of the what is called the bioavailability of the product.
Mm-hmm. And you see this Italy really as almost like a testing ground to roll out elsewhere?
Correct. For us, Italy is more like a springboard, a platform to understand the reactions of the consumers, to understand the trial rate, the repeat, and how much they were getting into the system. The system is very similar to what Nespresso or other coffee companies are currently using. You buy a machine and then you buy capsules. Here you buy a machine, which is the vaporizer, and then you buy the sachet, which are made of Hapak. And we are the only one, funnily enough, at the exhibition in Napoli, we were the only one really showing evaporization with this system with herbs. Yeah. So we would be surprised to see somebody else because we have a patent on this. All the others who are proposing the vaporization, they are proposing vaporization of oils. Mm-hmm. And as you know, or as many knows, oil is a process that the plant should go into a chemical process to obtain the oil.
Yeah.
So the other benefit of our proposition is that it's totally natural.
Yeah, absolutely.
And once you have used your little sachet, you can dispose into your compostable bin. Mm-hmm. You don't have to dispose in plastic as the other vape pen, which are based on the electronic cigarettes technology.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. Well, listen, Dom, normally at this point, of course, is that in nano developments, people can get an exposure to you. But, you know, in your thoughts, if people are listening right now, like the sound of this, but are not yet following Ananda, could you give them 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on their page and add them to the watch list, please?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I mean, there are more than 3 reasons probably to work with Ananda and why they came to us. First of all, I love working with people, and I think is important that you work with a team of people who are finding the right chemistry. And immediately, I think Melissa, Charlie, Jeremy, and all the people working in their team are a bunch of professional people, but also very, 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 very nice to work with. Mm-hmm. The second bit is that they are very active in the new emerging markets. They are now into the medical cannabis, and they are willing to stay for the long run. Mm-hmm. And they add credibility to our company too. And the third bit is they put the money, and they believe this will be the next big success into the space.
Marvelous stuff. Dominic, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
No, thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You're right, Chris.
Yeah, very good, thank you, very good. Busy old day again in the middle of earnings season.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It's a good day for me, because a while back I bought my wife some BT shares. Average price is around 260, and literally she's been nagging me every day. It's been below that. And today we sort of broke that price, you know, and it's at a gap of, it's up about 10% up at one point, which is ridiculous for a big stock like that. But I mean, what's the deal here?
Well, it is ridiculous at a certain level, isn't it? Because it kind of implies that something big and mega that Mr. Market doesn't really understand has happened. But, you know, the reality is BT has been absolutely crushed recent months and the last couple of years. Mm. And, you know, you and I have talked about this one before, the fact that it has kind of classic credentials, you know, value credentials. It's got a big old dividend yield, 5.7% at the moment. It is chucking off free cash. So, you know, it can afford that dividend. You know, they do have some issues. Clearly, we know the telecoms market is changing, but they own some big brands as well, not just BT Broadband and obviously the fixed line network we all or many of us use, but also now they own EE. And, you know, that's a big opportunity potentially to cross-sell and get people excited over not just broadband and fixed, but also mobile and pay TV and related. So, you know, it always seems to me as if BT was a bit undermanaged. They've announced some managerial changes recently. New chair came in at the turn of the year, a real ball breaker, I think. So a guy who previously turned around Rio Tinto very successfully. So just the right sort of guy to kind of push through cost changes and culture changes. And they've just in recent weeks announced that the CEO is going to change. They announced the current CEO, Gavin Patterson, is going to leave a little while ago. But they announced his replacement, who I believe is taking over, get this, the day after the next quarterly earnings. So Gavin Patterson does the next quarterly earnings. The next day, the new guy takes over. Right. So there you go. But it seems to me, BT numbers today, look, they weren't sparkling. You know, revenues were slightly up at one level, which was okay. They said that the EBITDA, you know, an earnings measure, was going to be at the top end of the range, which I guess is better than being at the bottom end. They weren't amazing, but it seems to me as if they're starting to turn the corner. And it's all about hope. You know, they're changing the management team. They're talking about cost cutting. The EBITDA performance suggests they're having a little bit of sort of skill in stabilizing the business. And certainly, and I can tell you this anecdotally, I'm an EE customer and I'm a BT kind of like broadband customer. And guess what? For the first time ever, I got a document the other week saying, we know that you're both customers. Do you want to combine it? We can save you money. We can cross sell and try and hopefully, of course, sell you other things as well. I think the opportunity is there, it's apparent. I think today is not a day for selling your BT shares, booking this short-term profit. Actually, I think it's a day for saying this one is properly turning the corner and that the next stop should really be £3 plus a share again. So for me, I think this is an indication of a very sort of out-of-favour share is starting to come back a little bit in favour, and it's all to do with the hope of what the new management team might ultimately unveil.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I missed it, but I looked through it and said, oh, it's okay. I didn't know how it was going to open, to be honest. And I was quite surprised when it opened up like 6%, it gapped up. And I looked at the chart, and there's several now positive indicators on the chart. I mean, there's they've got what's called the Golden Cross, which is a 50-day moving average, crossing the 200-day moving average. And you've got a massive gap up, and it's above previous resistance. But also then I saw a note come out saying, oh, They'd exceeded their profit before tax. So it's up 24% since last year. And earnings per share is up to 29%. I missed that for some reason. I looked at cash inflow, which has gone down by 71%. I thought it was going to take a hit. But obviously they're improving somewhere. So anyway, the market seems to like it. There's also rumour, apparently, someone just tweeted me saying, there's rumour that the old Openreach may get spun out. And I think that's right. The real value driver, isn't it, there?
Yeah, no, that's right. And, you know, if they've got an activist shareholder on the books, Greenlight, you know, quite well-known, David Einhorn, quite a well-known character, and he's agitating behind the scenes about trying to get them to spin off Openreach, create value that way. I think there's a bit of sense in that. It's a bit tricky because you've got things like pension deficits and whatever to worry about too. But I just think talk about that is again just indicates that there's a bit of relative value in BT Group. And ultimately, as I say, I think you've got a share which has gone from being very out of favour to one which is just even perceived neutrally. And a perception neutral view, I think, is £3 a share.
Yeah. I mean, those big round figures are like magnets, aren't they? Once it's past 250, which it broke through easily, now it's going to be dragged towards that, hopefully. Hopefully the wife will be a bit more, you know, accommodating towards me generally. Well, let me back in the house now and again. All right, so what's next, Chris?
So, got to be Royal Dutch Shell, another big FTSE 100 name. They've come out with numbers today, and to be honest, they're following the usual playbook at this point of the cycle for large cap oil and gas shares, which is basically they're making more money because of the higher oil price from their upstream activities. Meanwhile, exploration and oil production and related, they've announced another big share buyback today, $25 billion, which reflects the fact that obviously they're being more successful in their profitability and generating profits and cash. And the gearing, the level went down slightly too. All good stuff from Shell, ticks the box. If you're owning it, you're probably thinking, I'm picking up a decent dividend yield and everything seems absolutely fine. My observation would be, I don't think there's a huge amount of massive exciting value in Shell. It's not a BT type story. It's at this level, it's had its sort of bounce back, you know, courtesy of the oil price rise and the fact that the BG purchase from a few years back is now looking a bit more smart. I think though tougher times come for Shell in the sense that they've got to decide at some point soon whether they want to start spending money on developing new fields. And I think they're going to have to, because I think that's the way that these juggernaut oil and gas stocks work. So my feeling is with Shell, shares were a little bit down today despite the good numbers. If you like, it's the polar opposite from BT. And I know stock market watchers are probably thinking, hang on, this is crazy. Shell's come up with good numbers. As you say, Justin, the BT numbers weren't flawless, yet their shares are up and Shell shares are down. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's all about what's factored in and where they're going. And I think with Shell, there's less scope for surprise. So still a dividend machine. If you're holding it in a pension fund or as a core stock in your portfolio, absolutely fine. No reason to panic or change. But if you're sort of the investor who's looking for how do I make a bit of money over the next 6 or 12 months, Shell's not very interesting. You know, inherently, there are, if you believe in the oil and gas cycle, then you look towards the services companies, the John Woods, the Amec Foster Wheelers and companies like that, which obviously now is part of John Wood, as giving you much more oomph and bounce into that. Or sort of some of the E&P names, which are obviously looking to develop new fields. I think the big integrated names like Shell are just, they're a little bit dull here, but they're giving you a dividend yield and they're telling you that the stock market, despite some of the fluctuations and volatility of October, is not a complete dead duck.
Yeah, I mean, if you look on a chart perspective, I was buying sort of obviously Shell back when it was in the dumps. I thought it very cyclical, massive company, and I started buying around £18 last time. It went down to about, dipped down to like about 13 or 12 quid, but obviously punched back up. But if you look at the chart, I mean, the equivalent of where BT is now with Shell, it's about £18 where Shell is breaking through that 200-day moving average and the Golden Cross is happening. And now they're up at what, 20, what are they, 20, almost 24 yeah. quid. So yeah.
Yeah, mid-20s, yeah, that's yeah, right.
Exactly. So
that's right.
It's a longer, they've recovered, haven't they? And BT
that's
haven't
right.
yet, you know?
That's it. Yeah. And that's what you've got to do in the stock market. You've got to, if you're, of course, if you're a very long-term investor, then you're looking to focus on great companies that are going to give you nights that you can happily sleep through. But the reality is, if you're a bit more tactical, you've got to look for a bit of relative value. And there's a bit more relative value, undoubtedly, in something like a
BT Group than there is a Shell at this moment in time. And you get a bit more dividend income from BT as well. So I think opportunities for both income and capital growth investors.
Yeah, yeah, model stuff. Okay, Chris, what's next?
Final one has got to be Just Eat. Now, Just Eat, you know, we all use them in terms of takeaway food. It's got a very fluid app and related. It's actually quietly become a FTSE 100 company. Who knew that? And it's interesting announcement for them today. The shares have been hugely volatile today. They started heavily down. And when I last looked, they were quite nicely up. So all over the place today. What they said was essentially was that sales were good. Order growth was good. Use of the app was very strong. Use of the app now is 57% of their orders, which is, you know, marvelous from the sense of running an efficient business and a next generation business, if you like. You know, Just Eat becomes like a technology facilitation play more than anything else. But they said that their earnings profile was going to be a little bit worse than they thought because they were investing in the business. So Just Eat's in this classic sort of dilemma of fast growing companies where they're doing everything right. They're growing very quickly, even in the UK, growing easily double digit and faster in less in other geographies around the world. But they're having to spend a bit more money to keep on building out their infrastructure, their technology skills and related in order to keep that fast business growth going. And obviously that can impact profitability in the short term. So I think Just Eat shares, the volatility today really reflects that. But when you look at the sort of the medium term chart, like let's say over 3 years or so, really interesting. Today, they bounced off or kind of found support below that £6 a share level. And if you look on the chart, £6's a really interesting kind of support resistance point. So it seems to me that Just Eat shares have come back because of the general market malaise and uncertainty in October. But that £6 level for believers is actually a really interesting level, and that was reiterated again today. So my feeling is from a purely kind of technical performance basis, below £6 a share, interesting level for Just Eat. They are actually, judging by today's numbers, still performing, still growing their network, and obviously it's a thematic play. As you know, we all order food and related. Just Eat's got a very dominant position, not just in the UK but many other countries too.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? When you pay for growth, and that's what you're doing with Just Eat, aren't they? It's a growth company, and if you look at it, what are they? They're valued at like $4 billion or something like that, and their EBITDA, they're going to say, is around about $165 million, which is, you know, it's crazy. And when you have downturns and the recent sell-off we had, it's these growth companies that have, you know, got big promises to keep. Those are the ones that take the hit, aren't they? You know?
That's it. That's it. Because, you know, what you're thinking about is where's this number going to go over the next few years and what am I going to pay for it today? And as uncertainty goes up, your willingness to pay high multiples goes down. Yeah. And, you know, that's reflected in the Just Eat share price rattling back over recent months. Yeah. But what's interesting to me is where it was, let's say, 2-3 years ago when the story was still building. And say this £6 level is an interesting level. And, you know, on fundamentals, I would struggle with this one. But I have to say, with growth companies, sometimes you need to take account of the chart as sort of saying, well, what are big, longer-term players willing to pay for it, all things considered? And as I say, that £6 level has an interesting ring to it and fascinating how it found support today when the share initially was down in the dumps.
Yeah. I mean, do you know what? They are one of these highly leveraged to the market companies, like I say, because you're paying for growth. And companies like that, almost, they fall hard, but they bounce back fast, don't they? So, you know.
Yeah, it's, well, obviously thematic growth is what it is. And certainly all I'd say to people is if you use it or you find yourself using the app more and more, then have a think about whether actually this is just a regime change, which you're seeing not just in the UK, but in many other countries in the world. As I say, they've got exposure to a variety of countries now. It's not just a UK play. So they are good at what they do.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Chris, thanks for that. And we'll catch up next week, fella.
Sounds a plan. See you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Premier African Minerals, PREM. At 4, Rose Petroleum, talked to Matthew earlier on. At 3, Bidstack, BIDS. At 2, Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas, that's ECO. And number 1, most followed companies, Core Potash. That's, is it KP? Let me just check the ticker there. I'm not quite sure. It's KP2. Yes, KP2 is a ticker there. Core Potash, And they're in the top five most liked RNSs too. So it's at five, Greatland Gold, replacement final results. At odd why that's the most liked replacement. At four, explains why it's most followed, Core Potash, definitive feasibility study received. At three, it's Greatland Gold again, the final results. So they're liked, more liked than the replacement. Obviously, the first set were nicer, more bullish, more upbeat than the replacement. At number two, Premier African Minerals, RHA update. And number one, most liked RNS, is the sale of T3 project and creation of new exploration joint venture with MOD Resources. And of course, that comes from, I think, Metal Tiger, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Metal Tiger MTR. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.